lurking. He's watching. He's waiting. Welcome to Fatal Flower Presents.
Hello, all of you spooky little goblins out there, and welcome back to Fatal Flower Presents, a podcast. So, how is your summer of horror going for you? Have you gotten to check out all the big goodies out there in the screen, on streaming? Hit me up and let me know what you've enjoyed, what you think is a stinker, and everything in between. I've checked out quite a bit of horror, quite a bit of big budget blockbuster action movies, and everything in between. And it's been a solid summer of good stuff. Obviously, Barbenheimer has been the highlight of the summer season for a lot of people, but there has been some little gems inserted in between that I think you should check out, which some of them I will be talking about on this episode. Up first, though, I wanted to talk about a recent screener that I got to check out from Dark Star Pictures called King on Screen. It is directed by Daphne Bywer. And it is going to be on demand and Blu-ray September 8th. So that will be coming up soon. It was in theaters shortly on August 11th, but I missed it. And maybe some of you out there missed the opportunity to check it out. I did get to screen it, so I will be looking forward to the streaming and Blu-ray announcements when they are out on September 8th. This stars Frank Darabont, Mick Garris, Mike Flanagan, Tom Holland, Vincenzo Natali, Greg Nicotero, Mark L. Lester, Dee Wallace, Tim Curry, James Caan, and many others. It's only 75 minutes, so it is a breezy talk about Stephen King and his adaptions. I'll read you the official synopsis, though. 1976, Brian De Palma directs Carrie, the first novel by Stephen King. Since then, more than 50 directors have adapted the Master of Horror's books in more than 80 films and series, making him the most adapted author alive in the world. What's so fascinating about him is that filmmakers cannot stop adapting his works. King on Screen reunites some of the filmmakers that have adapted Stephen King's books for cinema and TV. Like I mentioned, Frank Darabont, who did Shawshank Redemption, Green Mile. He did The Mist, which is one of my favorite Stephen King adaptions. Tom Holland, who did The Langoliers. Mick Garris, who did The Stand, Sleepwalkers. Awesome, fun, campy adaptions. Taylor Hackford, who did Dolores Claiborne, which is an awesome movie. More horror drama, but it is pretty solid. And this is billed as it's being a movie made for the fans and with the fans, led by an international ambition. And this was a lot of fun. This documentary could have gone on for another 75 minutes, and they still wouldn't have covered quite the amount of adaptions and depictions for film and TV that King's presence has been a part of. So this was a fun short little watch, and I recommend you either check it out on VOD or pick up the Blu-ray when it's available on September 8th. Now, the summer season is always known for big, over-the-top, big-budget movies. But this summer, there has been some sneaky little indie gems that have wedged their ways into the lives of cinema goers. One of those in particular movies was super hyped up, I think almost to the point that when I went to go see it, I was pretty let down. But it doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It just means that the hype I had built up in my own head from reading the reviews, reading the practical effects, and featurettes in Rue Morgue and in Fangoria, I kind of walked out of the theater like, okay, so that was it. But it is Talk to Me. This is one of those movies that is on the tongues of a lot of horror moviegoers out there. You may hear some people say it's the best movie they've ever seen. Some people say it's the best they've seen in decades, scariest so far, whatever. It's none of those things to me, but it is pretty solid. I think a 7 out of 10 for me. But it's good, and I think you should still check it out while it's in theaters. It's by Danny and Michael Filippo, who are twins, and they have a famous YouTube channel called Raka Raka. But this particular movie has put them in the horror stratosphere. It has done really well, and in fact, there is a sequel coming out, Talk with the Number Two Me. So Talk to Me in a different way. I'm not sure why they didn't go with the Talk to Me 2, T-O-O, but hey, it's their movie. When a group of friends discovers how to conjure spirits by using an embalmed hand, they become hooked on the new thrill until one of them unleashes terrifying supernatural forces. So what didn't work for me, like I said, hyped up, all of those practical prosthetics and makeup effects that I saw in those featurettes and on, you know, in Fangoria and so forth, you get to see them in this movie, but they're very flashy and they don't linger long. And I know that maybe that was a choice to not show too much, but as a creature horror fan myself, I want to see it and I want to see a lot of it. So that a little was disheartening for me, but it doesn't take away, I think, from the experience of a lot of people out there. It's sitting pretty high on Rotten Tomatoes and critics love it. Users love it. So you'll love it. But I think what really did work for me is when you do get to see those effects, you do get to see the dead in this movie. They are done in a really well manner. And the way that their influence permeates the characters in this, there is a particular scene where the possessed is destroying the body of who they're possessing. And there is one element to that that really just made me sort of jump out of my seat. And it is a thing that I have about eyes. That's all I'll say. And it did freak me out a little. But for the most part, it does a really good job. When you think A24, you're thinking, air quote, trauma mama drama, familial, you know, grief and all this shit that they try to entwing in horror movies that's already there. This is in this movie too. It's, you know, it's not to take away anything of it. It's actually done really well. The drama in this is really good. The horror in this is really good. 7 out of 10, pretty solid. I'm looking forward to the sequel. I hope that they do up the ante with how they portray the other world. And I hope they give us more practical creature feature effects, because I think they need to highlight those. Those were really well done, and I want to see more of that in horror. And so I want you to as well. So enjoy that while it's still playing in theaters. One movie that maybe isn't doing so well, it's a big budget, mainstream, entry-level horror movie, and that is Haunted Mansion. And I did not expect to ever talk about this movie because I didn't actually think that it was going to be much more than a Disney, you know, family comedy with a little bit of spooky elements here and there. But this movie does have some dark elements. It's a lot darker than I thought. It stars Jared Leto, Lakeith Stanfield, Tiffany Haddish, Owen Wilson, Jamie Lee Curtis, Danny DeVito, Rosario Dawson. Cast is packed. It's a pretty hefty amount of movie in your viewing. You definitely get your money out of it. It's about a woman and her son. They enlist a motley crew of so-called spiritual experts to help rid their home of supernatural squatters, directed by Justin Simien. It has a hefty price tag on it, and it probably won't get back what it cost. What does that mean to casual moviegoers? Probably nothing. To me, I enjoyed it. I would definitely insert this into my Halloween rotation. I think it's one of those that you could easily pop in and enjoy with your family and even on your own. Some dark elements, some cool elements, lots of cool special effects in this. The good thing about this is, backed by a big budget in Walt Disney, they did give special effects a priority with this movie, it seems. So the effects are pretty good for what it is. If you watch the Haunted Mansion from the 2000s, you may not think any of those things, which is fine too, if you enjoy that movie. And for that one, I would say it's a 7 out of 10. It's not much more, not much less. It was a solid summer movie. And with those sevens, we're going to do a lucky seven here with Meg 2 The Trench. Now, this movie, I was not expecting to enjoy half as much as I did. And I actually like it quite a bit more than the first, the Meg, mainly because I think the horror is more predominant in this than the first movie. I also think that it was amped up to a 10 versus like an 8 from the first movie. There's a lot of kitchen sink thrown at the wall. Every ingredient you have in your house is in this movie. There's a lot of movie in this. If you've seen the movie with Kristen Stewart called Underwater, there is a extended set piece in the Meg 2 that I think kind of reflects that paranoia and isolation of being underwater. And I think they did this really well. Ben Wheatley directed this. And this is an American-Chinese production. So you can definitely tell that the plot is more for an international audience than I think an American audience, which could be why it's doing way better internationally. Will we get a Meg 3? I hope so, because I really enjoyed this one. What's it about? Well, Jonas Taylor leads a research team on an exploratory dive into the deepest depths of the ocean. Their voyage spirals into chaos when a malevolent mining operation threatens their mission and forces them into a high-stakes battle for survival. Pitted against colossal prehistoric sharks and other creatures, relentless environmental plunderers, they must outrun, outsmart, and outswim their merciless predators. And that's the thing about this, is it's not just about the Megs. There is quite a few more creatures in this that I think were highlighted that I really enjoyed. So if you are of that background, you like Jurassic Park because you're looking at, you know, the creatures, dinosaurs, you're looking at like Godzilla movies because you like the creatures, you like the various options that you can look at. I think this is why this worked so well for me and why I liked it more, is because there's a lot more in it that is fun and dumb and stupid and pretty campy. And I think you'll get a lot out of it. So 7 out of 10, another sevens. And yeah, I think that I will break the sevens streak with my recent theatrical viewing experience, which actually is getting kind of torn apart from critics. And some people online aren't really happy with it, but I really thought it was done really well. It's an 8 out of 10 for me. It's The Last Voyage of the Demeter. And this has Javier Botet, one of my favorite character actors. And he's playing Dracula / Nosferatu in this. You have Aisling Francois as Anna, Corey Hawkins, Clemens, Liam Cunningham, who you may know from Game of Thrones, playing Captain Elliot, David Dishmalian, who's playing Walchek, who is in a lot of horror these days. He was recently in The Boogeyman, which I quite enjoyed as well. This, he actually has a more predominant role, so I was super impressed with his acting abilities in this. I think the viewers that have responded to the movie online, like if you look at Rotten Tomatoes or if you look at like Fandango, are pretty actually high versus the critics. There is a disconnect, but it is directed by Andre Overdahl. He did the fabulous Autopsy of Jane Doe, which is a movie you should definitely check out if you haven't seen it yet. He did Troll Hunter, which I wasn't that big of a fan of, but he did Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is sort of that entry-level horror, done more so in a darker horror way, I would say. But this was a big Universal Pictures monsters creature feature, big budget. And will it get the sequel that may or may not be intended in the end of this movie? I'm not sure. Does it need one? No, it doesn't, because I think as a movie, it's self-contained and does a really good job of giving, you know, the action, the horror. And this is a movie that I think actually excelled in the practical effects creature department, because here I've looked at Fangoria, I've looked at Room Morgue, I've read the write-ups about this, I've watched the featurettes about Javier Botet getting the applications of prosthetics, the makeup, all that went into filming this, how the set crew built the boat, the CGI that they use for the water, of course, in the backgrounds are there, but the boat is there. And they couldn't give Nosferatu wings. So that part is CGI enhanced, but he is a practical creature and they did an awesome job with the Nosferatu look. I always dig that style of Dracula more so than just a pale aristocrat. That will always be my go-to. May not be for everybody, but it certainly did give me what I was looking for in that period piece horror feature. And out of a 2-page chapter in Bram Stoker's Dracula, I think the director and the writers did a really good job of exploiting the themes and building the universe. Corey Hawkins, who is a Black actor, plays a Black character in this, obviously, who is out of his element. And there are themes in this that his character touches on that I thought were really interesting. That dynamic of being a first of your class, from Cambridge doctor and not being able to practice because of your skin color and being thrown into this environment on a boat as a doctor and the dynamics with the other characters. I thought it was really well done. And I like that Clemens was included in this story and who is a character that's not in Bram Stoker's Dracula at all. I think it was really well done. And I really dig this. I look forward to picking this up and also checking out those special features because I love watching featurettes and watching how the makeup process and all of that goes into a practical effects creature. Similar to Talk to Me, I'm very curious about some of the effects, even though they were briefly shown in that movie as well. I want to see how that process goes. And with this one, the creature is front and center a lot, and I like that. And I love the foggy gothic atmosphere. Very, very cool. So I will recommend all of those theatrical watches for you while they are still in theaters. Go to your local Cineplex and check out all the good horror out there. Now, one you could check out in the small screen in your living room or your laptop is a new one from Shudder that just dropped called The Communion Girl. And it is, it's not bad. It's maybe a 6 out of 10. The more I thought about it, I'm like, I really hate the ending, but I really like the movie. So I'm torn. But essentially, it just dropped maybe a week or so ago. And if you're looking for it too, it's called La Niña de la Comunión. It's by Victor Garcia. May 1987, while returning from a nightclub and after taking drugs, I love the IMDb description, new girl in town Sarah and her friend Rebe find a doll wearing a communion dress. From that moment, their lives will become a living hell. And it definitely does. This movie plays a lot like a J-horror style of movie, whereas there's not really creaky bones girl, pale girl in this. There is a zombified communion girl in communion getup and a veil and, you know, white dress in this that I think if anything, I want to watch how they put the zombie look for the girl, the ghoul in this. I want to see how they did it because there are elements of the makeup and prosthetics that make her look almost reptilian or insectoid. And I dig it. Like the eyes are very brighter, kind of blue sort of, and it looked very odd and it was really cool. And the makeup effects on the body were really cool. And essentially she just wants to drag these teens to a watery grave. And it has that ring element to it. I dig that. And if you watch it, you've seen some of these things before, but in a different way. The ending does reveal something that I think needed expanded on more than just a scene or two. And I think that was the downfall, as it abruptly ends. And sometimes that can feel like a non-ending. It kind of took the movie down a little for me. But I enjoy movies about dolls, about cursed dolls, and about creature-y, supernatural slasher kind of vibes. So I think you'll dig this. Like I said, 6 out of 10. So check that out. All right. So we've got a couple movies coming out that one I'll be reviewing is Shaky Shivers. That will be in theaters towards the end of September. I think it's September 1st when that comes out. It's like one of the Fandango limited events. So I'll be reviewing that. So be on the lookout for the next episode. I'm going to try my damnedest to go see Slaughterhouse, because if you haven't seen the trailer for Slaughterhouse, it's about a sloth that these girls sort of make as their sorority house mascot, and the sloth named Alpha becomes an alpha, and she starts picking off the girls one by one in a very gratuitous way, and I can't wait to watch it. That is going to be coming out actually in a couple weeks, the end of August. So I don't know if I'll get to check it out, but either way, I can't wait for Slaughterhouse. I'm looking forward to Shaky Shivers, and yeah, and I'm obviously going to check out The Nun, Nun 2. I mean, I like the trailer. It doesn't reveal a lot, thankfully. Hopefully there's more to it than the couple of jump scares you get in it. I'm not expecting a whole lot because, you know, it's a big budget mainstream Conjuring-verse movie. I really dug the first Nun movie. A lot of people didn't like it. I got some joy out of it. I like the gothic campiness of it all, so I dug it. I hope it leans into that again. And I'm also kind of looking forward to Saw 10. Like, I dug Spiral, the last one. I thought Jigsaw was pretty decent. I think this one looks more in line with the first three sequels, or first three movies, the look of it, the aesthetic, and I'm ready for some Jigsaw action. So definitely looking forward to that at the end of September. So I do have one book here that I'm part of a spooky book club now. So shout out to Jen and Brianna. We haven't gotten a chance to discuss this yet. This actually only took me a couple days to read. It's a fairly easy read, but it is from Ian Reid, who is famous from I'm Thinking of Ending Things. And this is called Foe. So the description: in Ian Reid's second haunting philosophical puzzle of a novel, which that's to be debated, set in the near future, Junior and Henrietta live a comfortable, isolated life on their farm, far from the city lights, but in close quarters with each other. One day, a stranger from the city arrives with alarming news. Junior has been randomly selected to travel far away from the farm, very far away. The most unusual part, arrangements have been made so that when he leaves, Henrietta won't have a chance to miss him because she won't be left alone, not even for a moment. Henrietta will have company, familiar company. So I think Ian Reid does a good job in this of setting up a dystopian future, keeping it isolated on the farm. A lot of this is day-to-day spousal, domestic relationship interactions. I think there definitely is a horror element to it, more psychological horror. I don't know. I mean, I would recommend reading it. I don't know if it's something I would run out to go read again. Maybe the motion picture that's going to be coming out, I think this fall, actually, September, October, it may have something to it. But there were some moments that there's a reveal. I don't know if I would like say a twist, but there is a reveal in it that wasn't bad. You can kind of see it coming if you've seen this type of story or read this type of story before. It was pretty decent. I think out of 10, maybe a 6 out of 10 for me. But yeah, I think if you see it out and it's pretty good price, check it out. I picked it up for $12 and I don't regret it. I'll probably end up giving this to somebody as a gift. But I think maybe if you're into that psychological sci-fi more than a little horror, I think you'll get more out of it. So that's all I have for the book section. I am going to be, I started a book called Breeders from Douglas Clegg. And oh boy, it is a lot of book all at once. And I'm only halfway in. And if you've ever read it, I think it came out in 1990. It's got some smut, some sleaze, some insectoid horror in it, and some weird baby horror in it. And yeah, it's cool so far, so I dig it. So maybe by the next episode drops, I'll be able to talk a little bit more about Breeders from Douglas Clegg. Aside from that, thank you all for your ongoing support, and also for reaching out to me on Horror Amino. I don't get on as much as I used to, but I appreciate all of the interactions I have with you all, wherever you're at, whether it's on Facebook or on Horror Amino. And so reach out to me there. This is all for this episode. And also reach out to me at FatalFallPresents@gmail.com. Stay safe, stay spooky, and that crispy autumn air is on the horizon. So I cannot wait for the season. I know we got a lot of horror coming out, a lot of horror books, a lot of horror movies. So stay safe. Bye-bye.